Ashiri ya Fatima. He is giving a glad tiding to Lady Zahra Salamullah alayha that Mahdi is from you, that is from your generation. So we can make sure that for sure Imam Mahdi alayhi salam is from the generation of Imam Hussein alayhi salam.
Well, that was the very first connection we found between Imam Hussein alayhi salam and the Imam Zaman ajallahu ta'ala faraja. Well, there's a lot more to talk on the topic, so we'll continue to unravel the remarkable connection between Imam Hussein alayhi salam and Imam Zaman ajallahu ta'ala faraja. So stay tuned to IRIB English Radio for now. Take good care of yourself. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Where is the rising sun? Where is the spring of life? Where is the shining moon? Where is the firmest rose? Please, oh please, please come.
Story of chaos. Part 2.
On the other side of the market, Armor Group, one of the subsidiary firms of G4S, won an important contract in Iraq in 2008. In 2015, the Basra Gas Company signed a $270 million security contract with G4S. In Afghanistan, a security contract for the British Embassy involved £100 million. The interesting thing is the direct interaction between the US Defense Ministry with the contractors in the first decade of the 21st century rose up from $165 billion to $414 billion. Only in 2010, the Pentagon had to pay $366 billion to the contractors. The management model by the large security companies to create market and earn revenues and expanding the business have to be written down in books and taught in management faculties. During these years, we see the picture of some famous people on the cover of many books about success. One of them is Bill Gates, the CEO of Microsoft, a man who has legendary wealth with a company that has an astronomical value. He was the wealthiest man on the earth for a long time, and many people know him as a symbol of success. There are many pages on social media about the short inspirational sentences by Bill Gates as the secret of his success. They talk about Bill Gates' lifestyle as a man who wakes up early in the morning as an avid book reader and takes risks as a courageous man. And some say the most important reason behind his success is his generosity in charity works. They say many stories about the charitable activities by the Bill and Melinda Foundation, especially in impoverished African region. But fame and wealth paved the ground for spreading rumors. Bill Gates can't run away from the deluge of rumors either. When the coronavirus pandemic broke out, they spread the rumor that Gates wants to plant microchips in people's bodies through vaccination in order to control their body and mind. Half of the Fox News viewers believed the rumor. Some say it was Bill Gates who made the virus to implement his plan for the poor in the world. Some people quote his previous doctor that he didn't get his children inoculated. There is another strange rumor about the involvement of the Gates Foundation in torturing Palestinian inmates in Israeli prisons. But this one, unlike the previous one, was true. In 2010, when some news broke about torturing Palestinian prisoners and their hunger strike in protest against the harsh prison conditions, everyone was thinking about one company, G4S. G4S was the main contractor of the Israeli prisons. As the main culprit in the torture, it was targeted by sanctions by anti-Zionist movements. Some human rights groups gathered outside the company's headquarters in London, waving Palestinian flags. This time around, the protests were against the charity foundation run by Bill Gates and his wife. The response by the charity was strange. "Our priority is to earn more money to spend it for humanitarian causes. The investment branch of the foundation acts independently." The protests yielded results 2 years later. Bill Gates sold its stocks in G4S. But the trouble created by collaboration with G4S isn't always as limited and temporary as the protests over purchasing stocks. The long arms of G4S have now reached 16 Arab countries. The company's contracts with Arab countries have reached $1 million, which is considered 6% of the company's total transactions.
"Our foundation is built on quality manpower and deep-rooted in integrity and trust. We are fueled by our intention to serve and by our objective to be the best that we can be."
Providing security for the Baghdad and Dubai airports and embassies or sports events in Arab countries might not seem to be something unusual. But Saudi Arabia had dragged collaboration with G4S to new unexpected fields, the Hajj pilgrimage. Since 2007, G4S has had huge presence in Saudi Arabia. Before the Hajj season started in 2015, it signed a contract to provide security for the religious event. But human rights groups warned the Saudi rulers of repercussions of the agreement. The Hajj pilgrimage that year was different from the previous years.
Tragedy and grief on this holiest of days for Muslims. Hundreds of pilgrims were killed in a stampede in Mina on Thursday, and yet more injured.
The outcome of the cooperation between Saudi Arabia and G4S in holding the Hajj pilgrimage was the Mina tragedy, which left between 4,000 to 8,000 pilgrims dead, including over 460 Iranians. After the tragic incident, not only did the cooperation between the Saudis and G4S not end, but it expanded. Less than a year after the incident, the Saudi Minister of Hajj disclosed the plan to put electronic wristbands on the pilgrims. The wristbands would transfer all the data about the pilgrims to G4S. Besides the large security projects handed over to G4S in Saudi Arabia, the company has a wide presence in Iraq as well. Providing security for the flight hub, namely the Baghdad International Airport, is assigned to the company. But in 2020, a unique revelation was made about the security services contractor of the company. Reis Ghazali, the Secretary General of the Asaib Ahl al-Haq in Iraq, in an interview revealed that the British company G4S, which was tasked with providing security for the Baghdad airport, was involved in the assassination of anti-terror commander Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and top Hashd al-Shaabi commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. According to the security protocol in the Baghdad airport, when the planes land on the airfield, G4S has to be present in a special place in the airport. But that night, when that flight landed, the British company's car wasn't present on the usual site, but it parked right next to the staircases where the passengers were coming down. The security officers of the company accessed the cameras that monitored the airport, whose mission was to set sights on the motorcade. In the end, they targeted the main car in the motorcade, and the mission ended with making sure that the assassination plot had been carried out. After a period of dominance by nationalistic views, history is reverting to the past. Borders, maps, and rulings are gradually becoming meaningless. Ruling and running countries, either in terms of economy, culture, or security, are handed over to multinational companies. Security, just like health and education, isn't a public right for all anymore. It isn't a sacred and ethical service anymore either. It has turned into a good. Anyone who can pay more for it will get more of it. That's why no one has a positive view of security services companies and their mercenaries. It isn't about ideal religious inspirations or serving under the flag of countries anymore. No one considers them heroes. It's almost unlikely to name any street, square, theater hall, or warship after them, whether they go to fight and kill people in a country in West Asia or take care of refugees and asylum seekers in Central Africa.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked among
the holy prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant factor.
Imamat yek asl zinda dar tarikh Islam.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism. This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Mir Baghiri. Stay tuned.
اگر ما بخوایم به مقام بندگی برسیم، به مقام محبت الهی برسیم، طعم محبت خدای متعال رو بچشیم.
There are several steps to be taken to reach the complete servitude to Allah and to taste the presence of Allah in our lives. Based on a hadith, as long as the love for mundane world is in the heart of a believer, he or she is not able to taste the sweetness of servitude.
المؤمن اذا تخلى من الدنيا مؤمن وقتی به یه جایی رسید که از دنیا خالی شد.
If a believer could empty himself from the carnal desires of the world, he can promote in his spiritual status. In such a situation, the sustenance of a believer will be directly in the hands of Allah. In other words, the more we are faithful to our servitude to Allah, the more we can smell the fragrance of divinity in our life. The sweetness of divinity is only tasted throughout our servitude to Allah. Thank you very much, dear listeners of iRive English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulema's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hojjatul Islam Mir Bagheri. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
It's night, dark and cold. I walk in the city alone in the crowd.
Islamic laws.
Every street, every store is filled with colors and smiles as before. I know clouds are hidden behind these faces. Is there anyone who has a sunny heart? I put on my headphones and play the song, which repeats the enchanting whisper. I say, why is my heart set on fire when I hear your
بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم. In the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. And we would like to actually express our condolences and sorrow and sadness for the martyrdom of, you know, the master of the martyrs, Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, peace be upon him. We're going to talk about some of the Islamic laws regarding the mourning ceremonies of Imam Hussein, or in commemoration of his martyrdom, and also Arba'in. Well, before that, let's take a listen to a short biography of Ayatollah Khamenei, and we'll be back. Don't go away.
A little bit of background about Ayatollah Khamenei. He was born in 1939. When he began his Hawza studies, it took him 5.5 years to finish the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh. The standard time for studying the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh for an Iranian student that is not raised with the Arabic language is about 10 years. At the age of 18, he starts attending Bahthul Kharij. Bahthul Kharij, he starts it in Mashhad under Sayyid Hadi Milani. For 7 years straight, he was in Qom studying under Ayatollah Burujerdi, Imam Khomeini, the son of Ayatollah Ha'ari, who set up the Hawza in Qom, Sheikh Murtada Ha'ari, which was one of the top figures in Qom. Then he went back to Mashhad. For 4 years, he studied Kharij under Ayatollah Milani again. Speaking to some of those who knew Ayatollah Khamenei in Iran, when the issue of the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei came up, they said, "We testify that he was a mujtahid not now, but in 1337, that's in the Iranian calendar, 1337, that's the first year that he started his Bahthul Kharij. He was teaching also. He had classes, he was teaching makasas, some of the advanced classes in the Hawza, he was teaching that. 5 years before the actual movement started by Imam Khomeini, he was a mujtahid according to that testimony. And when the movement of Imam Khomeini began, he was part of it, he was politically active, but he also was involved with his studies, as we said. Up to 1347, he was actively participating in Bahthul Kharij of Ayatollah Milani in Mashhad. And after he became the supreme leader, a little while after that, because he was requested a lot to start Bahthul Kharij, he started Bahthul Kharij and he's teaching. One can very clearly testify that this man is no doubt one of the most just and adil scholars that would not, for any reason, for his children, for his family, for his personal benefit, for any party's benefit, for anything other than Allah, change his view and make a decision to go against what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said because of something like that.
Back to the program, Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Jahad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We are talking about some of the jurisprudential laws about Muharram, in which this is the sad and solemn month in which the grandson of the Holy Prophet has been assassinated and martyred. Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Sheikh Javid, is it recommended to commemorate this event everywhere, every year? If so, how should we commemorate the event of Ashura?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, there is no doubt as to the fact that it is highly important to commemorate the event of Ashura, as it marks the martyrdom of the grandson of the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him. Muharram is an important event in the calendar, in the Islamic calendar. And of course, it is necessary to respect and to revive this event every year. وَمَنْ يُعَظِّمْ شَعَائِرَ اللَّهِ فَإِنَّهَا مِنْ تَقْوَى الْقُلُوبِ. So whoever respects the symbols and the, you know, the signs of God, then he is the one who he has a pious heart. This is a rough translation of the Quranic verse. So Muharram is a great opportunity for Shia Muslims to propagate their values, to propagate their the teachings, the school, the teachings of the Shia school across nations. And of course, it is a great opportunity. It's a school for everyone to come to and learn lessons of freedom and liberty, learn lessons of justice. And of course, Muharram is not only about, you know, wearing black and shedding tears or weeping or crying. What is more important is, in fact, to get familiar with the goals and ideals of the chief of martyrs, Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam, who sacrificed his life and the lives of his companions and his children on the day of Ashura. Of course, we have to get familiar with the goals and objectives of the of his revolution. That's more important than wearing black, than, of course, attending the majalis, simply to beat our chests. Of course, these are also very important, and these also should not be ignored. The importance of such practices should not be ignored either. But what is important is that we have to avail ourselves of this opportunity to learn lessons from the epic, from the revolution of Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam.
I see. Sheikh Javid, we all know that wearing full black is kind of reprehensible or makruh under normal circumstances, right?
Sure.
Days and nights. But the thing is, for the Muharram, a lot of people, a lot of Muslims actually, they dress in black.
Yes.
All right? Sometimes in partial, black, and sometimes full black. So my question is that, is it reprehensible, is it makruh to wear full black during Muharram or even Safar?
Of course, there is nothing wrong with wearing full black during Muharram and Safar. It's not makruh because it's a kind of showing
veneration and respect.
Yeah, veneration and respect for Abu Abdullah al-Hussein alayhi salatu wassalam. And of course, black is a sign of grief and sorrow and sadness. So expressing sorrow and sadness is highly important. It's very much recommended. And there's no objection to someone wearing full black.
I see.
Even during prayers. Mm-hmm. In the month of Muharram and Safar.
Even during prayers, you said?
Yeah, of course.
I see. Okay, thank you very much. Let's take a short break and we'll be back and continue our program, Islamic Laws, on IRIB English Radio. Stay with us.
The followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khomeini's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, ya Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah, oh Allah. Don't let me go astray, cause I need you.
Back to the program, Islamic Laws, on IRIB English Radio. With me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program. And my guest speaker, as always, Sheikh Javid. We are still talking about some of the jurisprudential laws about Muharram. Sheikh Javid, is it permissible to have one's marriage or even engagement ceremony, right, in the month of Muharram or Safar?
Well, to be honest, of course, there are many people who are under the impression that no nikah, no marriage ceremony should be held in the month of Muharram because it amounts to a kind of disrespect to Azadari and to the month of Muharram. But that's not the case because actually nikah itself is recommended. It is mustahab per se. And the same is the case with marriage. As long as the nikah ceremony or the marriage ceremony is not accompanied by music, by expressing joy and happiness, of course, if nikah is solemnized, of course, in the month of Muharram and Safar, of course, there will be no problem in it. And what the religion and the Islamic Sharia says is different from what maybe the common understanding perception about nikah is. So nikah itself is recommended. It's not restricted to any other month to be allowed in those months. Of course, it's permissible in every month and any given day and any given week of the month and year. So it is permissible as long as it's not accompanied by something which could amount in common view as disrespect or disrespectful to the month of Muharram and to the Azadari.
What about the holidays? Especially I'm talking about those days like Tasua and Ashura or the days and nights, when the infallibles somehow are martyred and we commemorate their anniversary, their martyrdom anniversary. So for those days, Muslims especially hold high regard and veneration and respect. And isn't it a sign of disrespect, for example, to have one's marriage on the same day or night?
When something is recommended, when something is mustahab, and you solemnize the marriage contract by for example, saying, "Ankahtu wa zawajtu," okay? And the other party says, "Yes, I have accepted." So there's nothing wrong with that, with doing this.
But in common eyes, it's considered disrespectful.
In common eyes, of course, even in, not only in common eyes, but in practice, no Shia Muslim, as far as I know,
as far as we can see,
no Shia in practice actually solemnizes his marriage contract in the month of Muharram or even in Safar, as we see here in Iran. So when something is considered disrespectful, it's better not to go ahead doing it when it's viewed, when it's perceived as disrespectful. But there's nothing wrong with simply reciting the marriage contract.
Religiously speaking. It's not disrespectful or it's not, let's say, reprehensible.
It's not reprehensible either, yes.
Uh-huh, I see. Okay, and my last question, Sheikh, is it permissible to use the property of public treasury or public fund for holding commemorative gatherings for the martyrdom of the infallibles?
Well, public treasury, as we call it, Baytul Mal, okay? Baytul Mal has probably, it is an institution that has certain rules and regulations which are relevant, of course, and it should not be that those rules and regulations should not be overlooked. They should not be violated. And if, for example, using the property or the public treasury property is in accordance with the rules and regulations, there is no harm in it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Sheikh Javed, and thank you, my dear listeners, for listening to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio, in which we try to touch on some of the jurisprudential laws about Muharram based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Thank you very much for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every breath that you did take, every step that you would make, purpose and guidance it gave, mankind's heart it reassured. awake. Many people did leave the first teachings received. Hossein planned to retrieve loss of faith he perceived. Many people did leave the first teachings received. Hossein planned to retrieve loss of faith he perceived. Guide, you would be in place of Rasul to restore the sacred bridge. Light, you would radiate in the dark and continue the message. When you passed through arid sand, met foreigners of new lands.
In the limelight.
In the U.S., a Republican lawmaker, Tony Gonzalez of Texas, has condemned the crisis at the southern border and inhumane treatment of migrants attempting to cross into the United States, but did not pin the blame on Texas Governor Greg Abbott. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. Representative Tony Gonzalez, whose Texas district includes 800 miles of the U.S.-Mexico border, said the tactics used to deter illegal migration are not acceptable, but stopped short of criticizing Texas Governor Greg Abbott. Governor Greg Abbott has implemented floating barriers in the middle of the Rio Grande River, as well as razor wire to deter migrants from entering the United States. In an internal complaint, a Texas state trooper raised concerns about the tactic, saying it put migrants, including young children, at risk of drowning and serious injury. The trooper also claimed Texas officials had been directed to withhold water and push them back into the river. In one instance, the trooper said he and his team rescued a woman who was struck in the razor wire and having a miscarriage. The border crisis has been anything but humane. I think you're seeing the governor do everything he possibly can just to secure the border, Tony Gonzalez, a Republican, told Face the Nation on Sunday, 23rd of July. Gonzalez added, I don't think the boys are the problem, noting that migrants were drowning long before the floating barriers were put in place. The reality is the boy is only a very small little portion of the river. When pressed on whether it was acceptable that migrants were being harmed by such measures, Tony Gonzalez said, this is not acceptable, it's not acceptable, and it hasn't been acceptable for 2 years. The Biden administration has threatened to sue Texas if the barriers are not removed, saying it violates federal law and creates serious risk to public safety and the environment. However, Texas Governor Greg Abbott appears unlikely to back down. We will see you in court, Mr. President, the governor tweeted on Friday. On Sunday, 23rd of July, the White House responded with a statement saying that if Governor Greg Abbott truly wanted to drive towards real solutions, he'd be asking his Republican colleagues in Congress, including Texas Senator Ted Cruz, why they voted against President Biden's request for record funding for the Department of Homeland Security, and why they're blocking comprehensive immigration reform and border security measures to finally fix our broken immigration system. Gonzalez had also called on Congress to step up and offer solutions. I don't want to see one person step one foot in the water and more or less have us talk about the discussion of some of these inhumane situations that they're put in, he said. We can't just wait on the president to solve things. We can't wait for governors to try and fix it themselves, Gonzalez said. Congress has a role to play. Gonzalez recently introduced the Hire Act to make it easier for migrants to obtain temporary work visas to address the workplace shortage. He said the Biden administration is doing very little, if nothing, to focus on legal immigration. And he said he would much rather see a plan to deal with legal pathways than a focus on illegal entry into the United States. What do we do with the millions of people that are already here? What do we do with the millions of people that are coming here illegally? How do we prevent them from taking these dangerous trucks? One of those options is through work visas, he said. But Tony Gonzalez, Republican of Texas, wouldn't say if he had confirmation from House Speaker Kevin McCarthy if the bill would ever be up for a vote on the House floor. USA Today has also covered the same story and tells us more. Representative Tony Gonzalez, Republican of Texas, condemned the crisis at the southern border and inhumane treatment of migrants attempting to cross into the United States, but did not pin the blame on Texas Governor Greg Abbott. Gonzalez, whose district lies along Texas's border with Mexico, said on CBS's Face the Nation program, "There is a disconnect between what is happening at the top and the person at the ground that is doing the actual function." The Justice Department informed Texas Governor Greg Abbott that Texas officials have until Monday to remove a floating barrier wall of buoys he recently approved in the Rio Grande Valley, or else face a lawsuit. At the shoreline of the river are razor wire barriers also put up at the instruction of Governor Greg Abbott. Critics have said the barriers are inhumane and pose a real danger to public safety. Texas Governor Greg Abbott scoffed at the letter, writing on Twitter, "We will see you in court, Mr. President." Gonzalez said the border crisis has been anything but humane, but added that he thinks Governor Abbott is doing what he can to secure the border. "I think you're seeing how desperate a situation is happening in Texas," Gonzalez said, calling for his fellow lawmakers to act on the issue. "We cannot just wait on the president to solve things. We can't wait for governors to try to fix it themselves. Congress has a role to play in this." State troopers were reportedly ordered to push migrants attempting to cross the Rio Grande River back into the water and deny them drinking water in extreme heat. Representative Tony Gonzalez on Sunday slammed the treatment and said it was not acceptable. "Everything that is happening along the border is just adding fuel to the fire, because you're having people at the very top say one thing and the people down at the ground do another," he said. Gonzalez added, "The governor no doubt is doing everything he can to secure the border." Gonzalez laid the blame on lower-ranking officials. In a letter to President Joe Biden last week, more than 80 Democratic lawmakers, led by Representative Joaquin Castro, Democrat of Texas, attacked the border policies as barbaric and putting asylum seekers at serious risk of injury or death. The letter also took aim at the floating barrier wall in the Rio Grande River, which could pose an increased risk of drowning for migrants who attempt to cross the Rio Grande. Representative Gonzalez said he did not think the buoys are the problem, since we've seen people drown last year. There were hundreds of migrants that are drowning, adding that the buoys occupy a small portion of the Rio Grande River. The website bnn.network/politics has also covered the same story and tells us more. Representative Tony Gonzalez, a Republican whose district includes 800 miles of U.S.-Mexico border, has publicly aired his criticisms of the methods Texas has been using to deter illegal migration, calling them not acceptable. These tactics, implemented by Texas Governor Greg Abbott, include floating barriers and razor wire in the Rio Grande River. A Texas state trooper has echoed Gonzalez's concerns, stating that these methods pose significant dangers to migrants, including to children, putting them at risk of drowning and even serious injury. Despite his criticism of the tactics, Representative Gonzalez, Republican of Texas, did not direct his disapproval at Texas Governor Greg Abbott directly. He stated that the governor was doing everything possible to secure the border. He also argued that the floating barriers were not the root of the problem, as migrants have been drowning even before they were put in place. Gonzalez emphasized that the issue of migrants being harmed by such measures was unacceptable and has been for the past 2 years. He called on Congress to offer solutions and criticized the Biden administration for its lack of focus on legal immigration. In response to the workforce shortage, he recently introduced the HIRE Act to make it easier for migrants to obtain temporary work visas in the United States. The Biden administration has threatened to sue Texas if the barriers are not removed, asserting that they violate federal laws and pose a serious risk to public safety and the environment. Texas Governor Greg Abbott, however, appeared unyielding, responding with a terse, "We will see you in court, Mr. President."
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the importance of reciting the Holy Quran and Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. It is such an honor to be here at your service, dear friends. In today's episode, we are talking about the importance of reciting the Holy Quran and Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Now, we find that on the night of the 10th of Muharram, meaning the night prior to the 10th of Muharram, which is known as Ta'suwa, this night before the 10th of Muharram, we find that the companions of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, the family members of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, and of course Imam Hussein alayhi salam himself, he spent a part of this night in the recital, in the recitation, in the contemplation of the Holy Quran. Now, it really shows you the importance of the recitation of the Holy Quran, and it shows you the importance that the Holy Quran plays in our life, and it should play, it must play in our lives. Unfortunately, sometimes we don't give the due value and the due importance to the Holy Quran in our lives. Unfortunately, may Allah forgive every single one of us. But the Holy Quran is a guide. It is this source of comfort and tranquility. It is this book, a divine book, of course, which speaks about, you know, stories from the past to give us guidance. It gives us stories about the future in order to give us guidance. It tells us about the lives of the various prophets. It tells us about the Day of Judgment and all of these different aspects. All in all, it is a book of guidance. It is a book to take us out of darkness and into the light. And so this is why we find that Imam Hussein alayhi salam, he shows us the importance of reciting the Holy Quran, because the Holy Quran will guide us, it will protect us, it will bring us salvation both in this world and the hereafter. And in order to show this to us, we find that Imam Hussein alayhi salam, on the night before the 10th of Muharram, he spends a part of that night in the contemplation over the Holy Quran and in the recitation of the Holy Quran itself.
السلام عليك يا أبا عبد الله
وعلى أرواح النبي.
Welcome back. This is A2Z on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we are talking about the recitation of the Holy Quran, its importance, its value, and of course, Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And we had said in the previous segment, of course, here we find that Imam Hussein alayhi salam, on the night before the 10th of Muharram, in which the companions and the family members and Imam Hussein alayhi salam knew that, you know, the next day they are most probably going to be martyred. And because of the overwhelming odds, right? I mean, you have, a couple of 100 people, individuals, which include women and children, on the side of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. You have perhaps a little over 70 soldiers, in the camp of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. But on the other hand, you have well over 10,000 individuals who are battle-ready, who are battle-hardened, warriors, killers, if you will, on the other side. And so they knew that they were going to get martyred. And it's interesting is, despite knowing this, they still understood that when you have a very few time left on the earth, there are very special things that you should be doing. One of them was the recitation of the Holy Quran. Now, before we end the program, just merely reciting the Quran does have rewards. It does have spiritual effects. It does make an impact in our life and brings about a positive energy, if you will, this spirituality in our life. But contemplating over the Holy Quran, thinking about what the Quran is saying, thinking about what the Almighty Allah is saying, pondering, reflection over the Holy Quran is more important. It has more value, and it must be done along with the recitation of the Holy Quran if we are to live that truly pure Islamic lifestyle.
Again he looked at the horizon, the stars were waiting for him.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A2Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parsetoday.ir/EN Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Anyone stay here, won't be alive tomorrow. You can save yourself tonight and go. Silence, fill the air.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.